Well, Matt, and welcome to episode 154 of the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for June the 4th, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast, we continue our two-month discussion of Cymbeline. I'm going to do some video reviewing here, as well as talk a little bit about names. So let's take the videos in order, shall we? In 1913, the first film version of Cymbeline was made. It was directed by Lucius J. Henderson, with a script, or scenario, by Theodore Marston. Like all silent films, this is a pretty short movie, just 22 minutes. It's got no Shakespearean text because, well, it's silent. All the dialogue and plot are conveyed through intertitles. But if you know the story, it's fairly easy to follow. Obviously, at 22 minutes, there's going to be quite a bit they leave out. But what's more interesting to me is what they've added. The first 3 minutes, over 10% of the running time, is devoted to the backstory, the kidnapping and woodsy raising of the two princes, the queen's jealousy, Cloten's goofiness, and the courtship and marriage of Imogen and Posthumus, here just Leonidas. All stuff that takes place before the play proper begins. But like I said, we lose some stuff, like the queen being evil, the drug, Cloten's disguise and decapitation, the visitation by Leonidas's dead family and the living god Jupiter. At the end, Imogen stops Leonidas from killing himself, and after all of the revelations, there are hugs all around. Now, there's really no reason to watch this, unless, of course, you're a completist, a silent movie buff, or a fan of Florence Labadie, who played Imogen. Who's Florence Labadie, you ask? Only one of the biggest stars of early silent films, and pretty much the first movie star to ever die at the height of their popularity. So, yeah, there's that. The film is available for viewing on our YouTube Cymbeline playlist. In 1982, as part of the sixth season of the BBC Complete Works series, Elijah Moshinsky directed his version of Cymbeline. As with just about all of the BBC films, this one's pretty stagey and very faux Elizabethan. Well, this one looks more old mastery, but that's neither here nor there. Now, we've seen Moshinsky's work in the series before. A Midsummer Night's Dream, solid, accessible, All's Well That Ends Well, painterly like this one and well worth a look, Love's Labor's Lost, a little too formal for my taste, and Coriolanus, okay, but weirdly self-contradictory. And the cast is definitely a well-stacked deck of actors, with Claire Bloom as the Queen, Michael Pennington as Posthumus, Robert Lindsay as Iachimo, Michael Horden as Jupiter, and, I've saved the best for last, Helen Mirren as Imogen. Now, as I read the play, the ridiculous amount of early plot exposition gives the play an otherworldly, almost fairy tale vibe. This production really doesn't go that route. From the very opening moments when we hear the two lords discussing the kingdom, we don't watch them speak so much as we watch an aged, uncomfortable, almost pained King Cymbeline. Stagey, stately, talky are the keywords here. When we meet Imogen, we find a woman stressed, frazzled, severe. This is just about the least attractive I've ever seen Mirren, a huge disappointment after her pretty hot Titania for Moshinsky in Midsummer. Initially, the vocal performance is just as off-putting, almost screeching. And early on, the technical aspects of the film do the actors no favors. I don't know if it was the video transfer or not, but the picture is so oversaturated with light that when Imogen and Posthumus move to in front of a window, the light from behind them washes out everything in the backlit shot. I began to worry that I wouldn't make it through this, but the individual performances were solid. Cymbeline was old, weak, shaking, but think less doddering and more Parkinsonian here, which makes the queen's manipulation of him cruel. And as the queen's son Cloten, Paul Jessen is just wonderfully comic and foppish. Now, when the play hits Rome, the production finds its rhythm and hits its stride. Still stagey, this scene intercuts with weird close-ups, not of the actors, but of the chessboard as Posthumus and Iachimo play. Here, Postumus is handsome but somewhat dull, while Iachimo is obviously smart and quick-thinking. To show the decadence of Rome, Mushinsky gives us this weirdly ornate mural in the background of the scene. But on it, up in it, there is this loincloth, middle-aged man with a neck ruff drinking from a huge goblet. I guess he was supposed to be a cherubim of some kind. I mean, a live actor hanging in a tapestry. Weird, but kinda cool. Now, the good luck streak continues through the wonderfully overwrought seduction attempt of Imogen by Iachimo, complete with Imogen overhearing a feigned aside by Iachimo. The chest scene that follows, with its sweaty, shirtless Iachimo creeping about the bedroom, totally worked for me. So there are some very, very cool things at work here. The physical decay in Postumus's looks as the play goes on. Claughton's song sequence, and him watching himself being dressed by Pisanio for his Act IV soliloquy. At least it was a soliloquy in the play. And yet, there's just something amiss. There's some pretty judicious cutting of the script, but it doesn't help the pacing or the length. I mean, sweet Christmas, the timing clocks in at just under 3 hours. Really? That ending scene just drags on for a day. Of course, that's more on Shakespeare than Mushinsky. Then there's a breaking of the 180-degree camera convention in Act 3, Scene 5, the hallway conversation between Claughton and his mother. Honestly, it took me right out of the experience. And that viewer distancing was worsened by a later bizarre cutaway to a super high contrast, to the point of making it look animated, shot of two birds flying to avoid showing Guiderius decapitating Claughton. So, there are some great moments here, particularly in the first half, but I don't know. There aren't too many choices out there, so this is probably the one to watch. Just don't expect it to be great. Which brings us to the 2014 theatrical release directed by Michael Almereyda and starring Ethan Hawke, Ed Harris, Dakota Johnson, and Penn Bagley. Now, this is not our first run-in with Mr. Almereyda. Back when we were discussing that melancholic Dane, geez, was that really 2 years ago? Yes. Yes, it was. We reviewed his 2000 Hamlet with Ethan Hawke. I gave the modern dressed film some props for the use of security cam footage in the Hotel Elsinore, Hamlet being a hipster filmmaker, Ophelia wearing a wire when with Hamlet, as well as Gertrude's silent but visible whisper to Hamlet after she had swallowed the poison. And some of the supporting performances were very, very good, especially Liev Schreiber. But Hawke, I thought, was a bust. I think I said at the time that it was like watching a dog speak Russian. His lips move, sounds come out, but it just doesn't work. Well, Mr. Hawke has improved his Shakespeare game in the intervening decade and a half. Now, he's no Branagh, Fassbender, or Hiddleston, but he doesn't embarrass himself this time around. His Iachimo is actually pretty damned good after a pretty meh first scene, but more on that later. Almereyda, however, is up to his old, let's update the heck out of the bard tricks. He has set Cymbeline in the world of, wait for it, motorcycle gangs. In a weird kind of Sons of Anarchy meets Game of Thrones vibe, and I never really bought it. That said, the concept must have been pretty damned appealing given the cast that he's assembled. Ed Harris as Cymbeline, Delroy Lindo as Belarius, Mila Jovovich as the Queen, Anton Yelchin as Claughton, Vondi Curtis Hall as Lucius, John Leguizamo as Pisanio, Bill Pullman as Sicilius Leonidas. Now, most of them acquit themselves well. Lindo, Hall, and Leguizamo are fine. Harris is wasted in the role. It's not that big a role to begin with, and the cuts don't make it any meatier. Like I said, Hawke isn't bad, so is there anyone playing the role of the Russian-speaking dog? Sad to say, yes. Dakota Johnson as Imogen is never believable, looking confused for most of the film. Penn Bagley as Postumus fares a little better, but not much. The problem for most of the performers is that Almereyda is going for such a naturalistic style that the film comes off as having very little energy, read that first scene with Hawke. And at times, it feels downright amateurish. So much of the film makes no sense or doesn't work, but I don't want to pile on. But man, there are certainly much to find fault with. So I'll dispense with, browser histories, flamethrowers, Hershey kisses, cheerleader outfits, Clinton jerking off, and Bob Dylan covers, and just ask one simple question. If there is easy, maybe too easy communication via pictures on an iPad and texts, why is it again that Posthumus and Imogen don't communicate at all after the seduction? I will give Almereda props for one thing, though. The cheeky use of keep your head as a tagline for the film. Of course, that just might be the marketing folks over at Lionsgate. So, I've taken one for Team Bard on this one, folks. I've watched this so you don't have to. You're welcome. And here's a not review. Note, when I do the review, see what I did there? I view the videos all in the same month, if possible. Macbeth, with its slew, made it a little difficult. I don't technically review anything that I haven't seen recently. Thus, what follows is a not review. Now, in late October of last year, my wife Lisa and I took in one of those cinema broadcasts where they stream a video of a live performance, usually done live for the British cinemas and then recorded and rebroadcast for the rest of the world, to a local movie house. Well, as luck would have it, the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of Cymbeline was the production in question, and since I had never seen the play before and knew it was coming down the pike, we plunked down our hard-earned cash and checked it out. I really should have written about it right then and there, because my memory is sketchy at best. And as best as I recall, the major directorial concepts presented were a modern dress setting, though more post-apocalyptic than present-day, a gender-switched Cymbeline so that it was Queen Cymbeline and a new evil husband, and a gender-switched son in the Welsh woods. There was an interesting opening bit of two toddlers, one girl, one boy, playing in what looked to be a home movie. It was the two boys, well, in the play, taken by Belarius, as we would find out later. It was also interesting because they didn't call Imogen, but Inogen. It seemed by the preliminary behind-the-scenes material to be kind of a big deal, though at the time, it really didn't make a difference to me, but more on that a little later. I remember liking it, quite a bit actually, but details are fuzzy. But if remembrance is right, this is actually the version you would want to check out, if of course it was available, which it's not, at least not yet. So, final grades? 1913 silent version. It's only 20 minutes long, so what the heck. 1982 BBC? Yeah, I guess you should check this out. Not because it's awesome, but because 2014's Almereda is the one you should avoid. Seriously. Shakespeare fans, need a poster to hang in your room? Teachers, need some nifty handouts for your students to peruse as you introduce them to the Bard? Or are you just in the mood for some printable versions of some of the cool infographics found on this website? Well, regardless of how you answered those questions, I've got a scratch for that itch, a solution for that problem. Check out the Bill Shakespeare Project page on the Teachers Pay Teachers website. You can find character maps for Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar, previewing the characters and their relationships to one another. I've also got geographical maps so your students can wrap their heads around travels within the plays Troilus and Cressida. Yes, even TNC gets some love. All's Well That Ends Well as well. See what I did there? Plus Pericles and Othello. There's also handouts on the so-called history in Macbeth and Julius Caesar, time in Romeo and Juliet, and violence in Titus Andronicus. Also, you'll find entire packets of handouts for both King Lear and Macbeth, including scene-by-scene timelines and the interactions as well as relationships between the characters. And I'll be adding even more soon. Plus, this is where you can find the printable version of the new and improved periodic table of Shakespeare. Some of these are for free, and some are for purchase, but all can be found on the Bill Shakespeare Project page on teacherspayteachers.com. Oh, and if you want to purchase a pre-printed poster-sized version of that periodic table, well then head on over to the Bill Shakespeare Project page on redbubble.com. Links to both of these sites can be found in the left-hand margin of this website. Now there's a wonderful little theory or legend concerning Cymbeline, and more importantly, his daughter, Inogen. Yeah, you heard that right. Remember that one of Shakespeare's sources for the play is Holinshed's Chronicles. in a different story than the Bard Pilfered here, but a story of another legendary king of Britain, well, actually, not a king, but the founder, Brutus of Troy, said protagonist had a wife, Inigen. And one of the earliest references to Cymbeline, our play, is in a book called, unironically enough, Book of Plays by Simon Forman. Now, he was a bit of a womanizing occultist, a wannabe alchemist, and, as luck would have it for Shakespeare scholars, a taker of notes of some of the plays he attended, one of which was Cymbeline, of which he writes about Inogen, the king's daughter. Inogen. Plus, some research shows that the name Imogen first appears in this play, while, of course, Inogen appeared much earlier, remember Holinshed. And it's thought that maybe, just maybe, the publisher misread the two consecutive N's as one M. So there's that. And a connection to an earlier play. Remember way back when, in the midst of Much Ado, we talked a little about missing persons in the play. Folks who showed up in either dialogue references or stage directions, but never appeared in the play proper. You know, there was Claudio's uncle and Antonio's son. And a woman named Inogen, mentioned in the quarto edition's stage direction for the opening scene, as well as the dance scene, Act 2, Scene 1. But we never hear from her at all, and we never hear about her again. So what's the big deal, and why does this matter one whit to the question at hand in Cymbeline? Well, dear reader, Inogen was the wife in that play to that patriarch of Messina, Leonardo. Leonardo. Leonidas. Tomata, tomata. Could Imogen, after the end of our play, no longer heir to the throne and married to posthumous Leonidas, have moved to Italy? Where their names got a little alteration to Inogen and Leonardo? Could they be Hero's parents? It's a stretch, I know. But a stretch that some scholars are willing to make. You know, like the folks over at the Oxford University Press. Those folks behind the new Oxford Shakespeare. Yeah, those guys. Now, am I willing to make the stretch? I'd say nah. I mean, how do we explain Antonio as Posthumus's an only surviving child? But there's one thing, and a thing that I haven't seen written about in the discussions. What is the only and offhanded reference to Hero's mother in the dialogue of Much Ado? Well, when Don Pedro, upon his arrival to Messina, asks if the young woman, Hero, is Leonardo's daughter, the patriarch answers, "Her mother hath many times told me so." Leonardo says that Hero's mother, the absent? Inogen often told him that he was Hero's father, leaving the doubt of paternity hanging in the air like a stale joke. After all these years, does Leonardo, still not trust Inogen? To which I can only say one thing. Hey, Posthumus, get over it already. Yeah, I'm starting to lean a little towards Inogen. If you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries since our last regular podcast, you've missed out on subjects including an announcement. Cymbeline Act 5, Thanks Jupiter! Cymbeline Post-Initial Read Thoughts. Friday Film Focus, Cymbeline 1913. Utah, Here I Come in August. So you think you can outwrite Shakespeare? Sacrifices and not? Two settings. More goodies. Cymbeline, Friday Film Focus, 2014, Almereda. Cymbeline, authorship, all bills. Posthumous Leonidas's dead mother says thank you, too. Remember, Shaw was not alone. Cymbeline, A Daughter by Any Other Name. Cymbeline, Friday Film Focus, 1982, Moshinsky, BBC. And maybe Shaw was right. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page or our Twitter feed. But remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, If you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again for our next podcast, when we'll continue Cymbeline with maybe a little Dirty Dirty and some Not So Dirty. We hope to see you then. Listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for June the 4th, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.